And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to get to your tweets. A number of players spoke to the media yesterday. We'll recap that. We'll go over the latest out of practice, and we'll start to look ahead to Monday's preseason game as well. I want to start with a few things that were mentioned during the pressers yesterday, Paul.
Yeah.
One of the things jumped out to me was what Brandon Marshall had to say. Number one, he was very open to saying that it's still a learning process between he and Eli Manning in terms of being on the same page and adapting to the offense. And I just thought that that was interesting because, you know, most players usually hold back on those items and they're not willing to say, hey, you know what? We're still actually getting to know one another at this point.
Well, Marshall's experienced enough to know exactly where he's at in training camp. Let's face it, 12 years in the NFL. If he can't identify his progress by now, that would be a problem. So I think it's good that, A, he knows where he's at, and, B, he's willing to tell us about it because he wants people to have realistic expectations. Let's face it, even though he's been practicing with Eli Manning during the course of OTAs, had the passing camp, and has been out here at training camp, he played two snaps the other night. And Eli didn't play in that game. So they've yet to have game action together. And I think that's important to note. Because Marshall doesn't want people to have unrealistic expectations that, oh my goodness, when they play opening night in Dallas, you know, is he going to catch seven passes for 200 yards and three touchdowns? No, that's not going to happen. So I think Marshall's doing the right thing by telling people that this is still a work in progress. He even said, I don't know how long it's going to be before we're totally on the same page together. Because I actually asked him, how many snaps in a game do you think you will need in the preseason with Eli before you guys are totally in sync and melting together? And he said he just didn't know. But he did say it's getting better and better and better, cited some examples, talked about how Eli, impromptu, whether they're after practice, during practice, at lunch, impromptu, Eli pulls him aside and starts quizzing him on some plays. And so the coach quarterback, if you will, is doing everything he can to get those guys totally in sync and help the process along, but they're not quite there yet. I'll be interested to see if we ask Marshall the same question in 3 weeks, you know, by the time they're done with the Patriots game, what his response is then. How much closer will they be? We'll see.
Yeah, he alluded to the fact that a lot of it has to do with the nuances of the game. And what he meant by that, he says in this offense, Paul, a lot of nonverbal communication at the line of scrimmage. And that's something that, even though he's got plenty of experience in the NFL, hasn't really been exposed to that when he was in Chicago and he was with Miami as well as Denver. It's a little bit different in terms of what Eli Manning brings to the table. And the other thing that he really mentioned, which I think it says a lot about what Eli Manning brings as opposed to some of the other quarterbacks he's worked with, he says Eli Manning is much more detailed than any quarterback that he's ever worked with in terms of having everything down to essentially perfection.
Well, that goes to Eli's football acumen. He's incredibly intelligent and a workaholic, and that's what you get from guys like that. Here's what I'm going to say, though. Think about when Plaxico Burress came to the Giants in 2005. His first season with the Giants, he and Eli got on the same page, and Plaxico didn't always have the greatest practice habits. But boy, when it came time to work with Eli, man, they got on the same page. Even if Plex might have been late to practices a number of times and got fined a number of times, he and Eli always had that connection, and they formed that bond pretty quickly to the tune of 76 catches for over 1,200 yards and 7 touchdowns in his first season with Eli. And Plex would tell you, Eli immediately became like his number one guy. I mean, he just absolutely adored Eli Manning. And they were able to do that relatively quickly. Can Marshall do the same thing that Burris did? I don't know, but I'd like to think so. We'll see.
Well, and speaking of what we'll see, perhaps, what the other thing that he discussed during the course of his press conference was, you know, everybody who's enamored with fantasy which I know you're not necessarily a huge fan of, always loves to project from a statistical
standpoint.
Fantasy football's
a nightmare for those who really love the game.
Well, and it's not an indication of team success, and it doesn't necessarily translate to wins. I think that's important to note. And that brings me to my next point, which Marshall laid out. There's a lot of speculation that with so many weapons on offense this season, Paul, perhaps other numbers will be impacted. For example, maybe Odell Beckham won't get to his typical numbers because more targets are going to go to the likes of Shepard and Marshall and Engram and the running backs. And what Marshall said was, you know, you can't look at it as somebody's distracting somebody else. It's more of how the attention of the defense gets moved over. So even if somebody's not getting catches, they're still at least helping out the offense, and you're only effective as the guy playing opposite you. And what he did to sell his point was he was referencing some of the other players that he played with during the course of his career. He mentioned Javon Walker when he was a rookie in Denver. He mentioned having Eddie Royal a little bit later on in Denver. Then you get to Miami, where he had a mix and match of a variety of guys. But to me, I think the best comparison, if you want to project to what the Giants maybe could produce in an ideal world with balance, would be what happened in Chicago in 2013 and 2014. Now, I went back and I looked at the numbers.
Okay.
The reason why those are the two most notable seasons is those are the only two seasons in Marshall's career where he's had three other teammates on his team, running backs included, Paul, that have ended up with at least 60 receptions in each of those two seasons.
Okay.
That's why I thought that was notable. 2013, Marshall had 100, Alshon Jeffrey 89, Martellus Bennett 65, Matt Forte caught 74 passes. Remember, he was incredibly involved as a receiving running back.
Yeah.
The following season, Marshall takes a little bit of a hit. He was banged up. Forte actually leads the team that year with 102 catches. Mm-hmm. Martellus Bennett had 90. That's the tight end. Alshon Jeffrey had 85, and Marshall had 61. It's realistic to think that four guys, if everything works out okay, I think could come close to those numbers.
It's possible, especially if the Giants' running game doesn't get on track.
Well, that's the wild card right there. That's the big wild card.
I really believe right now as we sit here today, and I like to reserve a lot of these judgments until after the preseason's complete. But I would not be surprised if Brandon Marshall caught 60 passes for the Giants this year and over 800 yards and maybe 7 or 8 touchdowns. I don't think those numbers are unrealistic at all. But here is one thing I do want to add. And you fantasy folks out there, you'll appreciate this, even though it's not necessarily for you. People have said to me, well, what about red zone? What about what Marshall does for you in the red zone? Is that going to dramatically impact Odell Beckham? And are the Giants going to take too much away from Beckham by having an Engram and a Marshall and a Shepard all on the field at the same time? Well, here's the interesting part about this, okay? Do you know who led the Giants in red zone touchdown catches last year? Take a wild guess.
Touches. So targets you're referring to.
Red zone touchdown catches.
Oh, touchdown catches. Okay, I thought you meant targets and everything.
Not targets.
Like that.
Targets, it was Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
Red zone touchdown catches. Wild guess.
My wild guess, I'm going to throw out Sterling Shepard.
6. Odell Beckham Jr., 5.
So Shepard had one more. Then Beckham.
So, I went further into this analysis, and I realized that Odell Beckham, of the great receivers in the league, when you look at his percentage of touchdown catches that were in the red zone, it's a much lower percentage than people think. And why is that? It's because Odell Beckham catches a lot of balls outside the red zone and runs them in.
Yardage after the catch.
Thank you. Therefore, the argument that Marshall and his red zone capabilities will deplete Odell Beckham's effectiveness or stats, I believe, is a misnomer. Because Odell, despite, I believe it was 21 catches in the red zone, which was, I think, top 5 in the NFL, his touchdown catches in the red zone, not that big a deal. So, here's what I'm saying, folks. I think Odell Beckham Jr., again, I'm early on this. I'm going to put him down for 90 receptions because I think he's going to have a higher percentage catch rate on his targets than he had last year when they just kept pumping him and pumping him and pumping him because there were few other open targets for Eli to throw to in the short amount of time that he had to get rid of the ball. Odell's catch percentage compared to his target number dropped last year because they had to force him so much. I say that Beckham's percentage of catches goes way up. He'll catch probably about 90 balls. I say his yardage goes up. He'll have about 1,500 yards. And he'll have his double digits, 10 touchdown catches. Now, why do I say the yardage will go up? I say it will go up because all of those weapons downfield will help spread the field and open up the defense, which means more yak yardage for Odell Beckham Jr. when he makes those catches on the run and Eli hits him perfectly in stride and Odell is taken off. That's why he will have more yards per catch, a higher percentage catch rate, and he will have his obligatory double-digit touchdown grabs. That is my analysis of how this is going to shake out.
I think that's a very fair point about Beckham's numbers because Beckham finds other ways outside of the red zone to do a lot of damage. And I think that you can't overlook that even with the arrival of Brandon Marshall as well as Evan Engram and Rhett Ellison because those guys are not nearly as dangerous in terms of yak yardage. So they're going to be more reliant, I think, when the Giants get down within the 20 to put up some of those notable stats where Beckham, he could be in the opposing territory, Paul, and still wound up getting a 50-yard gain because in the blink of an eye, we've seen that. I mean, you go back to the Baltimore Ravens game last season. He had two huge catches, and they were huge because of all the yards he got after the catch.
Think about what he complained about a lot last year, how defenses didn't respect the Giants' other deep outside threats or the running game for that matter, so they were constantly playing the Tampa 2 deep shell. And supposedly, that was the safest way to prevent the Giants from making big plays, and especially Beckham from making big plays. So what happened? In a number of instances, we saw teams actually change up and go to a single high safety on occasion. For whatever reason, I don't know. Call it stupidity, if you will.
Well, that's a fair label.
The Ravens did it. The Redskins did it. And what happened? Well, with a single high safety, that put more space deep into the secondary for Beckham to get the yak yardage. Well, guess what? With Shepard, Marshall, Beckham, maybe Engram, out on the field at the same time, how much space you think there's going to be in the secondary then? There will be no Tampa 2 to be an umbrella back deep in that zone, which means there are going to be a lot of times where Beckham's going to be manned up, even if he's doubled. And I challenge any secondary in this league to try to either man up or even double Odell Beckham and shut him down. Because if you don't have those two deep safeties back there, he is apt to bust a big one at any time in the game. And you can't commit to a Tampa 2 deep zone with all of the Giants' weapons that they're going to spread out all over the field. You can't do it.
And if you get caught with one safety deep, there's no way that one safety is going to
stop
Odell Beckham.
Michael Kay, yeah. See ya.
Well, yeah, I keep going back to that Ravens game. What happened in that Ravens game, Paul, if you recall, on one of the long touchdowns for Beckham, where he got all that yardage after the catch, one of the Ravens secondary players slipped. He fell. So they were already screwed because now you're down a man and you only have so much help down the field. So Beckham said, thank you very much. I will certainly outrun the entire defense. The only thing, though, and you brought this up earlier, and you have to emphasize this, as much as we're looking at a lot of space potentially that the Giants have to work with in the defensive strategy, this is all dependent on how the running game performs. Now, you still are going to take your fair share of chances and risks if you're a defense, regardless of how effective the Giants' run game is, because the Giants can still spread you out. But if they don't respect the run, Paul, you know, that gives them a little bit more flexibility in terms of moving personnel on the back end. That's the big point here.
It does. So there's no doubt, as I've always said, you've got to establish some kind of running game first. But my point still stands about being able to spread the field with those weapons. The defenses will have a little bit of an easier time to defend that if they don't have to worry about the run because they'll cheat.
Yeah.
Guys will cheat. They'll play more soft coverage. Even if they're playing man, they'll play a lot of bracket. And they'll be able to cheat with bracket coverage if they think the Giants can't run the ball worth a squat. So that's why that still becomes important. But even if they do that cheating, even without a great running game, they still should be able to do a lot of what I just talked about. So I understand why the offensive coaches are incredibly excited about what they're going to be able to do this year, because the weaponry that they have put on the field and the mix and the complement of talents that they have should give defensive coordinators nightmares. They really should. And, of course, it's all predicated on Eli staying healthy.
And all predicated on execution, too. Things could look great on paper. Can the guys make the plays, of course? Can they be in the right spots to thrive? 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to open up the phone lines. Anything you want to delve into, you want to get into what Brandon Marshall had to say, the offensive outlook, as well as what's going to come up in Monday's preseason game, some of the competitions to watch. We'll hit on all of that moving forward. Bash is in Ohio. He gets us going. Bash, what's happening?
How we doing, Lance? Hey, Paul.
Doing well, Bash. What do you got for us?
I mean, if I like the little analyst we did on fantasy. I'm a big fantasy guy. No, you're not, Paul. So I like the little thing you gave me, a little input I got from giant wide receivers we have out there. So I'm not guessing Beckham would be a top pick, good numbers out there. So thanks for the little numbers for me, Paul.
Sure. It wasn't meant for fantasy, but it does apply, though, doesn't it? It actually does apply.
But I was calling as far as we know we had 3 more weeks into the training camp and 3 more preseason games going on. So I was calling to ask about, as far as, do you see the Giants doing any early? I know they got the cut down from 90 to 53. Do you see the Giants doing any early releases for veterans and stuff and bringing in some veterans to at least get a week or 2 weeks in with the Giants and trying to acclimate as far as the playbook and everything, doing any?
There were some roster moves yesterday. Do you have them called up? I know that Drone and Thomas came off of PUP yesterday. They were very limited in what they did, and they'll slowly work into practice during camp. Also, Corbin Bryant, because of an elbow injury, was placed on injured reserve. And the Giants wound up signing a couple of free agents off the street. You know, it's slim pickings right now. Think about it. You got 90 guys under contract to 32 NFL teams. There's not much out there right now that you're going to be able to bring in that you feel confident are going to make your 53. It's really tough. I mean, even the guys now who they're replacing body parts with, they're training camp long shots. These guys are right. By no means, you know, in great position to make the 53. So my answer to you is, I don't necessarily think that anything's going to happen until that final weekend when every team slashes as many as 37 guys in one slice. It's going to be a real frenzy.
Yeah, a lot of these players are going to be playing catch-up if they join the roster now because they haven't been here throughout the entire offseason
program. And
that's
part of the bad sign or bad byproduct of this whole thing, which I'm not a big fan of. I've said that before. That's part of the reason why.
Now, it can happen in terms of once the 53-man roster is finalized, tweaks can happen, especially with more players on the market. For example, you know, last year, Jasper Brinkley was let go at the last second, and then Josh Johnson came in as that extra quarterback. So the Giants have done it. Just because they announced the 53 doesn't mean it's going to stay that way heading into week one against the Cowboys.
Lance, again, from 90 to 53 in one swoop, and I know you're of the belief that some teams may cut some guys
early. I believe that will happen.
But you're still talking probably at least 1,000 guys are going to be gone in that final
it's
weekend.
It's going to be an overwhelming number.
I think more than ever you will see every team in this league be apt to make changes to their 53 in that week leading up to the first regular season game because there's going to be such a marketplace of players that are looking for work.
Which means security is not going to be with a capital S for most players when it comes to how you feel on your respective roster. I just want to go over some of those transactions you alluded to. So Corbin Bryant was placed on IR. He suffered an elbow injury earlier this week at practice. So to replace him, they brought in Bobby Richardson, who played in 15 games with 11 starts as a rookie free agent for the Saints in 2000. 2015. Then they also filled their opening on the roster because, remember, they had moved some people around following the preseason game, so they added linebacker Steven Daniels, and this is actually his third NFC East team because he began his career with the Redskins. Mm-hmm. He then moved to the Eagles. He was recently let go, so now he's with the Giants. So that just gives you an idea of some of the defensive players that they brought in. And on yesterday's show, or 2 days ago, I should mention, we mentioned that they signed a wide receiver out of Rutgers, Andrew Terzilli, and then a linebacker, Chris Kasher, who they brought in as in the mix as well. So they've made a number of transactions over the last few years.
And we should also tell you, yesterday on the bikes, offensive lineman Adam Geddes was on the bikes, and so was Darius Powell, a wide receiver who a lot of people are intrigued by, probably best named as a bubble guy, to be honest with you. Doesn't help himself when he's on the bike.
Anything else for us, Bash?
Did we lose? Right, yeah. Well, yeah. I was more going to, as far as the free agency, as far as the veterans, and I know we've got a lot of young players, but I mean, as far as big name veterans or big names coming off the team, I see we let go a lot of like bottom people that may not make the team, as far as the bottom 90 of the front, but as far as big name possibilities, as far as like veterans or big name veterans that still out on the streets and stuff that may be released or make the team, as far as no name commodities and not like the team, as far as the wide receivers and the linebackers that we brought in and the people that got released and stuff, as far as like any big names on the Giants that may be on above that, you may see surprise that we let go before the 53 cutdown, and any big name free agents that still on the streets, as far as that have veterans in the league that may be brought in before the 53 man cutdown, and as far as letting go and being brought in, as far as veterans that are no names.
Well, Bash, I think you're asking a two-part question. Please, we're gonna let you go, but we'll answer this. As far as Giants.
Okay.
I don't see them getting rid of any, quote, big-name veterans. In fact, I think if there are some familiar names that will be cut, they'll be cut at the last minute. I don't think the Giants are going to let anybody go too early. And the reason I feel that is because this is a team, once again, that believes they're going to be in contention for the Super Bowl. They're not going to be taking any chances by letting a guy go early who they really believe can help them, even if it's depth chart-wise. It just doesn't pay because, again, there could be an injury that last couple of days at camp, and you don't want to sting yourself in the foot. So I think a team such as the Giants, they'll hold on to everybody as long as they can and try to make every decision at the last minute. That's my opinion. I don't know how you feel and about the other teams, too.
I would agree with that sentiment. I think, remember, you know, a big part of the offseason strategy has been to build up the depth chart. And if you're looking to build up the depth chart, you want to see how those competitions play out throughout the course of the preseason. So why would you be in a hurry to let go of a veteran if that veteran could turn out to be your third best tight end or your third best running back or whatever it may be? So I wouldn't expect any surprises unless, of course, somebody gets hurt and then they waive them injured or put them on IR. For example, what happened with Corbin Bryant.
Right.
I mean, that's always the wild card. You never know. And then somebody could be placed on IR who we never anticipated. As far as the other part of his question, Paul, which was, is there anybody currently out on the street that maybe the Giants would bring in? First of all, you know, I say this every single offseason at this time. If a guy is still on the street, there's a reason why he's on the street, okay? That means either he's not 100% healthy or perhaps teams have evaluated him and they don't think that he truly is going to come in to really, truly impact the squad. I would have said a different philosophy if training camp hadn't already started, because I know there's a lot of veterans, Paul. They don't want to go through the grind of the offseason program. They wait until training camp starts.
Correct.
But when we're now 2 weeks into training camp, now the conversation's completely different. These are not guys that just want to avoid training camp. There's reasons why they're still out on the street.
The only business reason that does apply here, and it's kind of it depends on a case-by-case basis. It's not generally the case, but it can be the case.
The financial aspect.
Yes.
Yeah.
The fact that if you sign a veteran off the street now, he's got to be guaranteed if he makes it for the season. And even if he doesn't work out or he gets hurt, you're stuck paying the freight against your salary cap. There are a select few guys who are fully capable of producing for your team who wind up signing after that first game. Because now their contract is basically a week-by-week thing, and you can, at some point during the season, if you decide they're not useful or they get hurt, okay, remember, we're usually talking about veterans who may be on the back end of their careers and more apt to be injured. and that you can get out of that deal during the season without hurting your salary cap. So there's a select small group of those guys.
There are, but what I will add to that is even if the team is holding off on that player because of financial reasons, they don't want the contract to be guaranteed, you then have to place expectations in check to not assume that if that guy walks in week one, he's automatically
right.
going to make an impact.
He's a role player.
For example.
He's a role player.
Definitely a role player, if anything, that you're going to get. You're not necessarily finding a starter. And I think the perfect example is a few years ago, remember the Giants brought in Adam Snyder, an extra offensive lineman, right as the season progressed. He did not make an impact, nor was heavily involved until we're talking about midway through the season.
But they brought Brandon Jacobs back.
But that's
the
different,
opening
though.
Game, and he became part of their running
well,
attack.
Well, but also that's somebody that's a little bit familiar with the
no
organization
question.
Compared to a guy that has had no familiarity.
I'll tell you this. Rashad Jennings will get signed, I believe, after week one by an NFL team.
I can see that happening.
And he will be a rotational back, and if at some point during the season he earns more snaps, he may even become a primary back for somebody. But I think Rashad Jennings is one of those guys who fits into that category.
I mean, another player that I'll use an example of, Chase Blackburn. When he came back later on in the season, why was it easy? Because he already knew the scheme.
That's
so
true.
Those players are the exceptions to the rules. I'm referring to players that have had no connection
right.
to the organization or the scheme. All right, let's head back to the lines. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi.
Right, you. What do you got for us?
Good. So coming into this offseason or this season, what were the two biggest needs for this team, you think?
Well, I think depth in a variety of spots. I would say
depth in the defensive backfield and offensive line, right?
Well, I would throw in secondary, too. I think you can make a case for perhaps cornerback.
The defensive backfield, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Sorry if I was
wrong. I thought you meant the running backs, that's why. Okay.
Okay, so the secondary. And it's kind of disappointing that the front office didn't really address the two biggest glaring needs. And it really makes me nervous, because as Paul just said, this team has, you know, potential real Super Bowl, you know, aspirations. And the fact that the two biggest glaring holes that could stop that were not addressed. And it just seems like that's really negligent, and it just kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. You know, I'm being very positive about this team. I know, you know, we have tons of weapons left and right, but the two places that could really stop us, as you saw in the Green Bay game, is if one of our top three guys go down, we're stuck. You know, if our offensive line can't create a running game or give Eli enough time to get
Abdul, the one thing I will say as I'm going to jump in here is I think it really depends on how somebody defines, you know, addressing improvement drastically. And what I mean by that is, you know, they did bring in DJ Fluker. Now, I understand you're going to say DJ Fluker doesn't play tackle, and that's probably maybe the position you're concerned about. And they also drafted right. Adam Biznavati, and I'm not making a case that he's ready to be a starter day one. But when you say they didn't address, I guess what I'm saying is it's a little misleading, because there were offensive linemen brought in, whether they be veterans or they be through the draft. And then on the flip side, once again, I'm not telling you to get ultra excited over this, but Valentino Blake was signed because he had experience as a starting corner with the Steelers and with Tennessee, and he was also a special teamer, which is the expectation of a guy that's going to be a fourth or a fifth corner. And what I will say this, and we've talked about this on previous shows, and then I'll let you continue. If you look across the NFL landscape, and I think it's important to do this just to provide context, you have to look at other teams, and when they go out and they address needs, and their needs are the sixth or seventh offensive lineman or the fourth and the fifth corner, it's unrealistic to think that they're going out and they're grabbing Pro Bowlers to play those positions. And that's right. The only thing that I think you have to look at. I'm not telling you, listen, my definition of addressing a position and your definition of addressing a position could be completely different, and that's fair. We're entitled to look at it that way. But when we say that it wasn't addressed, I think that's a bit misleading, because there were personnel that were brought in that could play those positions. Whether or not they live up to expectations, that remains to be seen.
I would add one more thing. I think of all the positions that the Giants had as they began training camp, I think I was probably most disappointed in their offseason moves in terms of the cornerbacks. I did not necessarily believe that Valentino Blake was going to be the answer there. He may still be. I don't know the answer. But here's what I will say. When I had my checklist back in the spring and said, okay, what do the Giants need? And what did they do during free agency? What did they do during the draft? The one spot beyond any other that I still felt, you know what, they just didn't get to that one was cornerback. And there were so many good cornerbacks in this draft. But here's the thing. There were three rounds. As you looked at the draft, there turned out to be three full rounds of high-quality corners that had a legitimate chance to help you this year in some capacity. Well, what the Giants do in their first three rounds? They took Ingram, who they think is going to have a dramatic impact on the team this season. They took Tomlinson, who they also believe will have a dramatic impact on the team this season. And they took Davis Webb in round three because they really think he's the quarterback of the future. Now, I can honestly tell you, as much as I would have loved to see them get a quality cornerback prospect, I don't think I would throw any one of those three guys back into the apple cart in favor of a corner. As much as I agree and I have a stomachache over this, the three guys that they took, you gotta, I mean, come on. You can argue all you like. There's logic in those three guys.
Well, here's the other thing, though, and we will let you continue. I know you wanted to make another point. What I will add to that, though, is even if they did draft a corner in the first three rounds, Paul, it's hard for me, regardless of how that player performed in college, to say that that makes you feel more secure putting a rookie out there as your fourth corner, more so than going out and getting a veteran in free agency. If you're going to address
that, depends on who it is.
Well, it does depend, but I mean, a rookie who has had no NFL experience, I don't think it's that much of a significant edge over somebody who's a polished veteran, whether or not he's had his ups and downs during the course of an NFL season. To me, I'm not necessarily feeling that much more secure.
And I guess that's the way I'm looking at it. You know what? They obviously felt that way.
Well, and I think that has to be understood, that may have been part of the rationale. Go ahead, Abdul.
So I look at the signing of JPP as a luxury. So instead of going out and addressing needs, we signed a luxury. Like, because our defense could still be good without JPP. I look at it as like we got a Ferrari instead of paying the mortgage. You know what I mean? Like, if we, and I don't remember who was exactly available at a tackle or at a cornerback, but those were greater needs to get NFL quality players than signing JPP that they can't get.
Abdul, the tackle spot. I mean, every one of those guys wound up getting way overpaid for the kind of caliber player that they are today. So I actually applaud the Giants. I mean, I was after Reef. I thought he would come in much less expensive mm-hmm. than he did. And for the money that he got, I thought it was outrageous. And there was no one else on the tackle charts. I mean, because Whitworth was way out of the price range. There was no one else in my mind that they were going to get value out of. So I thought they were correct in not going to force a tackle. But again, the corner situation, Brandon Flowers was the most accomplished free agent corner out there. He's coming off a concussion, and now he's retiring. So they were probably right there too. So I got to tell you, I appreciate your stomachache on this, but I don't know that there was a better answer. I really don't.
Yeah, if you look, Abdul, at the money that, you know, Riley Reiff, Matt Khalil, Russell Okung, Andrew Whitworth, Kelvin Beachum got. I mean, I'm bringing up the top free agents.
Crazy money.
Crazy money was thrown at it. And then it gets back to, are you just going to spend the money for the sake of spending the money, or do you actually get substance out of the money that you're throwing
out? And I want to give you the flip side to your argument, Abdul, and I think you'll be able to swallow this better. JPP, remember, huge part of stopping the run, which we were so good at last year, as well as being a pass rusher. Knowing that Hankins was gone, they obviously knew in their mind that Hankins was going to get a really good offer somewhere and was going to walk out the door. Well, you've really set yourself up now because, let's face it, if you think your fourth corner is weak, well, the best way to defend that is a pass rush. Why not keep your superstar pass rusher? And on top of that, if you know that you're going to lose a guy in the middle of that rush defense in Hankins, what better way? All we did for months was talk about how Tomlinson, if he wins the job, steps into a line that includes Vernon, Snacks, and JPP. So his life is so much easier because JPP is there.
Listen, I agree. You know, I said this is some thoughts I had. I hope JPP stays healthy because another thing, he always gets hurt. I don't think he's played a whole season for the past 4 years. So hopefully he does everything that he can and stays healthy. Is Nick Mangold still available? Or, you know, because I'm not as
he had some tryouts.
He did. I don't think he signed with anybody. But
I don't think
they're not bringing him in to replace Weston Richburg, Abdul, if that's what you're alluding to. That's not happening.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. let's be realistic. And, I mean, you know, Brett Jones is the backup center. And are you really going to overpay to bring in a seasoned veteran to be a backup center? I mean, is that practical?
I could see Mangold being one of those guys who winds up on a team after week one.
But I think that happen. But also because somebody actually needs a starting center,
yeah.
though. Yeah, I mean, for example, the Baltimore Ravens, John Urschel retired out of the blue.
Yeah.
That, to me, makes sense. You go after somebody like that because you need a starting center. The Giants don't need a starting center. And I don't think that they're going to throw money out just for the sake of bringing in a named commodity
to
be a backup.
I'm not saying the Giants. I'm just saying
I wasn't
Mangold
saying you were doing
wind
that.
Up somewhere.
And that's fine. I could certainly see that happening. And appreciate the phone call, Abdul. Thanks so much for chiming in here on the conversation. Yeah, I'm looking. Nick Mangold still listed as a free agent. And he did come in for a few tryouts across the league. But he has not landed with anybody. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Victor is in Florida. Victor, what's happening?
Yes, good morning, Paul.
Hey,
and,
Vic.
Lance.
How we doing, Vic?
Not too bad, but I'm a little disappointed. I was watching the game on Friday night, and I'll tell you, I know it's only the first preseason game, and you can't really tell the story on the first preseason game. Well, I'll tell you, the offensive line was horrendous. Where's this Eric Flowers?
Hold on.
They're running around Vic, circles around
Vic,
him.
Vic, horrendous is a little strong now. They were disappointing. For me, they were disappointing.
Disappointing.
Horrendous? Do you remember guys like Gordon King, Ian Allen? You remember those kinds of guys? Those guys were horrendous.
But let me ask you a question. Why is it that, like the Oakland Raiders, 4 years ago, they were the laughing stock of the NFL. Today, they got one of the best offensive line in pro football, along with the Cowboys, along with the Steelers, and along with many other teams. Why isn't it Reese? Why doesn't he spend money on offensive linemen? Why doesn't he do that?
Vic, I don't have any concrete defense other than to say that they did spend a one on Pugh. They did spend a two on Richburg. They did spend a one on Flowers. So in recent years, they have attempted to draft guys who would solve the problem. But I will say one thing that may somewhat appease you a little bit. In the years that the Giants had the money to go out and spend on veteran free agents, they had decided that the money was better spent, like 2 years ago, on defense to shore up the defense, because we all know defense wins championships and you're better off having a great defense than you are an offense. So in other years, I'll give you a great example. The year Jeff Schwartz came out, he was by far the best graded offensive lineman in veteran free agency. And what did the Giants do? Quick strike. They got him. And what happened? It didn't work out. They signed David Boss. They gave him a pretty nice sizable check. They thought he was going to work out. And it didn't work out so great, although they did win a Super Bowl. So what I'm saying is, I think the criticism needs to be more about the results that they got from some of their decisions more than that they did not try. I think they have made some attempts.
I understand that. Paul, listen. Now, I'm happy that we spent $210 million on defense, because I think we got one of the best defensive team in pro football. But the offensive line is a key component to our team.
I know,
it
Vic.
It opens up the run. It protects the passer. He can pass to all his targets. And without the offensive line to keep Eli upright, they're not going anywhere.
Well, Vic, what I'm going to add to what Paul said is, you know, keep in mind, in 2015, this team averaged over 30 points per game. And look at who was out there on the offensive line. Eric Flowers was a rookie who had to take over an injured Will Beatty. Listen, was it stellar play? Nobody's saying that it was the best offensive line. But the bottom line is they were able to produce with that offensive
like 27
line.
7 points a
Correct.
Game.
But what held the Giants back in 2015?
Defense.
The fact that the defense was bottom of the rankings in just about every statistical category. How many times was the opposing offense on the field and the defense couldn't make a stop and they lost heartbreaker after heartbreaker? So what did they do then in the 16 offseason? They said, you know what? We're going to now beef up the defense. They beef up the defense. Now the defense is a top 10 unit. Fortunately, the offense took a step back. So if you would have left the defense alone and not made tweaks to the 2015 defense and maybe just spent all your money on the offensive line, okay, so maybe you maintain the 30 points per game, Vic, but at the same time, where's your defense right now? Your defense is not going to have Vernon. Your defense is not going to have Snacks. So it's a really balanced type of effort that
Vic,
you have
Vic,
to go
Vic,
through.
One other thing, Vic. Honestly, please, try to take an aspirin with this one, okay? When you force the issue, okay, like in the draft, if they had forced the issue and taken an offensive tackle in the first round this year, they would have been sorry because the value would not have been there. They forced the issue in free agency for Jeff Schwartz, and it didn't work out so good. They forced the issue for David Boss in free agency. It didn't work out so good. You can't force the issue because that usually bites you in the rear end. So I applaud the Giants for not drafting an offensive tackle in the first round this year.
Okay, but let me say this, okay? Now, Mangold of the Jets is a free agent.
Correct.
I think Joe Thomas of the Browns is a free agent.
No, he's not. Joe Thomas
Why
is not a free agent. Vic,
no,
Vic,
guy.
Vic,
no.
First of all, Joe Thomas is not a free agent. He's on the Cleveland Browns roster. That's misleading. Nick Mangold,
okay.
You're right about.
Okay.
Joe Thomas, you have to give up assets if you want to get Joe Thomas. He's not out on the street right now.
Mangold's a center anyway. What do you want to do with him?
Where are you putting Nick Mangold? Here's the thing. If people are going to call up and they're going to be like, they want to tweak the tackle spot, Nick Mangold has never played tackle in his career. You're not putting him out at left or right tackle. So at least let's be realistic. Joe Thomas is a tackle. I get where you're going with that. You got to give up those assets. Joe Thomas is not going to come to you for nothing. So that's a little bit different than grabbing a guy off the street under the circumstances. And, Vic, listen, we appreciate the phone call. I want to get to a few other phone calls along the way here on the program.
George Young used to tell us all the time when people would fire off criticism about the roster or about guys getting certain amounts of snaps during a game, George Young would always say, if you don't have a better answer ready, then don't ask the question. And he's right, because it's easy to say, get rid of that guy. I don't want that guy. Do something else. Okay, what's the answer? If you don't have the answer, then complaining about it isn't going to help you.
Well, and you also, I always say this in any sport, you don't make a move for the sake of making a move.
Right.
It's got to make sense, Paul. It's got to make a sense. It's got to make sense financially. It also has to make sense from an X's and O's standpoint. Now, the one thing I will add before we get back to the phone lines, Vic brought up the Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders built their offensive line over the last few seasons, if you just look, between free agency and the draft. It was really a combination of both. Every team follows a different path. For example, Oakland went out, they signed Kelechi Osemele from the Baltimore Ravens. They gave him a lot of money. Okay, that was a nice free agent addition. Rodney Hunsett.
Huge ticket, by the way, for Osemele.
Correct, it was.
Huge
it did not
ticket.
Come cheap. But that would be an example. Okay, they addressed their offensive line through free agency. Rodney Hunsett, their center, was another guy. They grabbed from the Kansas City Chiefs. They also spent money on him. However, with that being said, Gabe Jackson, who they just gave a big extension to,
draft,
was a third-round pick. But he was a third-round pick, Paul. Mm-hmm. He was drafted in the same year that they got Khalil Mack in the first round and Derek Carr in the second round. And, hey, they struck gold in the third round. Sometimes you get lucky. You also look at the Dallas Cowboys, for example. You know, Dallas.
Finish off
you
KC.
You want to finish off Oakland?
They got Sharp in the fourth round. He's their starting left tackle this year, and he's a rookie, by the way.
Correct. And then Marshall Newhouse is slated to be the starter.
I'm not sure what they were thinking about that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Newhouse was not on the team last year, so we'll see whether or not, you know.
But that's how they rebuilt their line.
Yeah, so my point is, it was some rookies, it was some free agents. Now, if you go to Dallas, Dallas is also considered one of the best offensive lines. Paul, I think that's fair, right? You put them up there with Oakland. Dallas, for the most part, has really built its offensive line over the years with the draft. And these guys have turned into Pro Bowlers. When you look at Travis Frederick, when you look at Tyron Smith, when you look at, you know, some of the other guys that they took chances on, Lyle Collins, I'm not saying he's a Pro Bowler, but he was an undrafted free agent. They didn't really go out and bring in big-name free agents. They just drafted well. The players panned out, and now obviously they're in the midst of having to pay everybody, which becomes a challenge in itself. So every team, my point is, takes a different route to building their offensive line. Normally, it's a combination of free agency and the draft. And if you look at the Giants, I mean, the Giants, you know, they also tried to build it up through the draft with Justin Pugh, with Eric Flowers, with Bobby Hart, with Weston Richburg. And now you see them bringing in, you know, DJ Fluker through free agency. They had brought in Marshall Newhouse through free agency. You know, at the end of the day, it's all about execution. It's all about results. Well, I get that. But I think that the philosophy has been similar to what some of these other teams have done, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Well, even with the Giants, and I hadn't actually thought about this until just now as I wanted to confirm, the Super Bowl team in 2011 did not have a number one pick on the offensive line. Just saying. I don't know if anyone's actually ever said that before, but they did not. Beattie was a 2, okay? Deal was a 5.
Another draft.
Boss was a free agent.
Okay.
Snee was a 2, and Kareem McKenzie was a free agent.
Free agent. So 2 free agents and 3 draftees.
And Kevin Booth, who played a lot that season because Boss was hurt, was a free agent.
Free agent.
Picked up off the scrap
heap. Yeah, because he spent one season with the Oakland Raiders prior
okay.
to that.
So the Giants won a Super Bowl without a first-round draft pick that season on the offensive line.
And also without making a huge splash. That's the other big thing.
Well, they did pay some money to get Kareem McKenzie away from the Jets. And they paid a little bit of money to get Boss away from the Niners, too. Those were I won't say type A free agent signings at the time.
It wasn't what the type of money that was given out this
offseason. Well, no. Well,
I know the market has changed.
Market
I get that.
Changed.
Of course.
But at the time, those guys were rated as pretty high free agent signings. They weren't top shelf free agent signings that broke the bank. So all I'm saying is, you know, you don't necessarily have to have, you know, the top-priced offensive lineman free agent, and you don't necessarily have to have, you know, a lottery pick free agent, for lack of a better term, a lottery pick draft choice in the first round to win a Super Bowl.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. I know we have a lot of people that want to get in. Bobby's in Washington, D.C. Bobby, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing, Lance? How you doing today?
Doing right. Well, Bobby. What do you got for us?
Hey, I'm going to stay off the offensive line. We
thank
you. Know,
you. We, thank you
yeah,
so much.
Had no review off the offensive line.
My goodness.
But doesn't hurt, you know, get the stomach right that what we saw. Okay. I have a question, you guys. You know, I drink the Kool-Aid sometimes, you know, but I can tell if it's too sweet or it's sour. And I'm not going to smile and shake my head if it's nasty. Okay. We have we got rid of Williams as a running back, right?
Andre Williams. We got rid of Andre Williams,
even though we knew the offensive line was terrible for the last 2 years. Okay? We drafted who I believe is maybe the second worst running back in the league right now, starting running backs in Perkins. And I say that with respect to him as being a professional. He's the only running back with over 100 carries with 0 touchdowns in the league last year. And we're talking about starters and second string. And I don't see what they see in him. When I see him run, there's no juice, no spark, no juke.
Wow.
I don't see it. No,
you might be the only guy who doesn't see
it. Last year.
Yeah, you might be the only guy who doesn't see it because this guy's got moves. He's got quicks. He's a slasher. He's got cutback. He's a talent.
When did he show this, though?
A talent.
Last year, when did he show this?
Well, he flashed
a bit. Did he show it last year?
He flashed a bit, I would say. Bobby.
Did you watch the Redskins
screen,
finale?
On the screen pass, I think one time on the screen. Couple screen
well, that's the Minnesota game. But did you watch the Redskins game the end of the year?
That was his first 100-yard game.
He ran over 100. He was terrific that day against the Redskins. In a game the Redskins had to win to make the playoffs. Huge, huge game. You don't remember that?
Okay, I do remember that. Those first 100-yard games, last game of the season, wasn't it? I believe.
Month of the season, he averaged double-digit carries. Up until then, he had barely touched the ball. And then they started weaning him in, and then by the end of the season, he had overtaken Rashad Jennings as the starter, and they threw him in there against the Redskins, and he ran for 100 yards.
Well, I truly believe that we have a better chance of moving the ball successfully with Darkwater in the back, so long as he stays healthy. And I say that because Darkwater runs hard. He makes the first guy miss it. And, and what we saw from Perkins, that, you know, 5 carries, it's pretty much what he gave us last year. And when I say that, he did pretty well every now and again when there was a big hole. But when there wasn't a hole, he couldn't make a hole. He couldn't create anything. And that's what makes good guys good. You know, and how long does it take us to realize when guys good or not? You know, when you got guys like Odell Beckham, his first year, rookie year, what he does. When you look at guys like in other teams in Atlanta, like Freeman, his rookie year, look what he does. It doesn't take long for you to know this guy is something special.
Well, I'm just going to say this. I'd like you to be patient with Perkins, and let's see how it works out, because he's still a very young player, and I'd like you to just give him a little bit of rope here and see what happens over the course of this season. But in terms of your comments on Darkwa, Darkwa runs the hardest of any of the Giants running backs on the roster right now. He, to me, is their best bet to be the short yardage back and the hard-nosed, ram it up between the tackles back. I like Orleans Darkwa. I always have. The problem is his injury history makes you very skeptical as to whether or not he can truly take on the workload that you're asking him to.
Well, and a few things I want to add.
We don't have a
Bobby.
Home run hitter, though, right? We don't have anybody that can go up the gap and run for 40 yards, 50 yards, and get touchdowns.
Well, I think Perkins is capable, Bobby. The problem is the guy played 5 games last year where he had double-digit carries. I mean, I'm not saying you're not entitled to your opinion, but you're basing it, your opinion, off an extremely small sample size.
Yes.
I mean, let's see him play a full season. You mentioned Devontae Freeman. Devontae Freeman had 65 carries as a rookie. He averaged under 4 yards per carry. Devontae Freeman's breakout year happened in his sophomore year in the
right.
NFL.
So, how many touchdowns did he have?
He had one touchdown.
Carries.
He had one touchdown.
One touchdown.
And
he had 112 carries.
Hold on a minute. You want to talk about touchdowns? How about Melvin Gordon, Bobby? Melvin Gordon played 14 games as a rookie running back for the Chargers. You know how many carries?
He wasn't starting, though. He wasn't a starter.
Oh, he had 184 carries, though. Okay, so he had more than Paul Perkins that year. How many touchdowns did Melvin Gordon have as a rookie? He had a donut. He had a donut. He had 0. You know what he came back in his second season? Melvin Gordon had 10 touchdowns this past season. So my point is, if
now
we
you're
have...
comparing him to Melvin Gordon? Okay.
I'm not I'm not comparing personnel, Bobby. What I'm comparing is sample size. You're making judgments about
right.
Paul Perkins off of a minute sample size. He had 5 games where he had double-digit carries. And of those double-digit carries, he had 2 games where he had 11 carries. You know running backs, they need to get into rhythm. When he had 21 carries, he had his first 100-yard game. If we see these numbers again this year, then I think we got more to go by. But I think you're jumping to conclusions.
I guess the only problem is right now we're at a pivotal point where we need to win. We really do. I mean, we, as a Giants fan, and I bleed blue, and I said it before when I called, I named my firstborn Taylor, and it's a girl. I'm tired of mediocrity here. I mean, I'm just saying.
Well, let me say this to you. Let me say this to you. The Giants did draft Wayne Gallman out of Clemson, okay, with the hope that he would enhance the depth in the backfield and potentially enhance the competition. So that if Paul Perkins turns out not to do what they think he can do, they have another young guy who they think they can turn to who was extremely productive in college. And as you said, hopefully Darkwa stays healthy. And I will say this, despite the fact that Coach McAdoo has named Perkins the starter going into the preseason, I don't think there's any question in the world that if it does not work out after a few games, he will make a change because he doesn't have a lot of patience, especially with a team that needs to win now. He will give more carries to other guys if they produce, and you won't have to worry about Paul Perkins. If he's not getting it done, he's not going to get the ball.
And, Bobby, listen, we're going to let you go. I want to get to a few more phone calls. Appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, Len?
I don't know which one of you guys mentioned Ian Allen, but now I have a stomachache.
Which one do you think?
I mean, clearly.
You flushed Ian Allen.
Clearly that was Paul.
Which one do you think?
out of my body, and you had to bring up the name. God, that was terrible.
I'm sorry.
Now, Gordon King wasn't too bad a player, Paul.
A lot of penalties, though.
But, oh my goodness. Ian Allen. Oh,
geez. I mean, come on. Hey, it was yellow flying all over the place with him.
Over the last couple of weeks, particularly this week as we get into the preseason, you know, the calls are getting much more serious. I mean, Vic and this last person who called, I didn't catch the name, I'm sorry.
Bobby.
You know, talking about...
Well, Len, you don't sound too serious, Len.
Talking about having to win. The Giants have to win. He's absolutely right. The Giants have to win. We got to put back-to-back playoff seasons here. especially with this roster. I mean, this is, you know, you can't have this kind of roster and not get there 2 years in a row. So, I mean, I understand where that guy was coming from with this, you know, with this call. In a perfect NFL world, to me, that means no injuries. Impossible. That's why I say it's a perfect NFL world. If you have to pick up somebody Labor Day weekend who you think is better than you got on your roster, the general manager hasn't done his job.
I disagree with you, Len. I disagree. Len,
the Giants have got their roster.
Len, that's an unfair statement. Len, if you're replacing the 52nd guy on the roster, what's the crime in that?
Right.
You're making it sound – if you're replacing three starters on Labor Day weekend, I get your point. If you're replacing the 52nd or 53rd guy on the roster, what's the problem with
Len,
that?
Len, you remember the 1990 season? You remember right before opening day, the Giants picked up Dave Duerson, who had been waived by the Chicago Bears. Was that a bad move?
No, Duerson was a nice player.
He played
God
in the sub package. He played in the sub package, and he helped them win.
Yeah.
Was that a bad move?
Listen,
I'm just asking. Was that a bad move?
That was an okay move, but you came on saying that is basically disgraceful.
The
53rd player. Wait. Now, give me a chance here.
All
the 53rd player on this team is the third-string quarterback. You going to pick somebody up off the street better than that third-string quarterback?
That depends on if somebody's on the market. Well, maybe a backup is like,
no, they're not going to take another.
But Len, you randomly picked
like one position. So if they get, so let's go with they get rid of the.
You pick another one.
They get rid of the fourth running back, and they feel they can upgrade the fourth running back. You're going to tell me that speaks volumes of bad decisions
that were
made in the offseason?
Len, wait a second.
Running back here, Len, on the market Len. Better than Orleans Darkwa.
Len, here's the problem.
Len, hold on one second. Go ahead.
Your entire premise is based on a liquid foundation. You should want the Giants to have the best 53 that they possibly have to go into the regular season with. And if they find out that there is, let's say, a backup cornerback or a fourth-string safety or a backup lineman or a backup linebacker who they really believe is going to enhance their depth chart right before opening day. If they don't pick that guy up, they haven't done their job, and they haven't done a service to you as a fan of this team to put the best 53 on the field. And you're sitting here complaining that that's a bad sign. Len, you got it backwards. Are you out of your mind? Honestly. Seriously.
Listen, you can call me out of my mind if you want, but I'm on the right track here, Paul.
You don't want to get a better player if you can?
If this general manager has got to replace, on Labor Day weekend, has got to replace fourth string running back, who we knew was the fourth string running back in February, we got a problem, Paul.
Len, there are guys under contract. Wait, there are guys under contract to other teams who might be better than your depth chart who you can't have the opportunity to acquire until they get cut. Len, what are you saying? My goodness.
I want to make sure you understand what I said. I'm not saying Jerry did a bad job, okay? I'm saying if that manifests itself, then a general manager has done a bad job. But let me talk. Can I talk about the fifth?
Before you even go to your next point, do you remember how at the very end of the preseason, the Giants cut Steve Weatherford and made the deal to get Brad Wing in here? Brad Wing was about to be cut by the Steelers. Jerry Reese called Pittsburgh and said, "We want to upgrade our punting situation. We like that Brad Wing kid. Can we give you a seventh round pick for him? Because we know you're going to cut him, and we're afraid that if he gets out on the open market, somebody else is going to get him." Did you think that was a good move? They upgraded their starting punter at the very last minute. Did you think that was good?
That's a great use of a seventh-round pick, Paul.
Here's my question, the point is he still went out and upgraded the team.
They got rid of a starter under those circumstances. We're talking about backups, and he gave you an example of a starter.
Anytime you can upgrade your team, you do it. You don't worry about what some person thinks.
Len, real quickly, what else you got?
Just say this. Go ahead.
I want you to have an opportunity to get out what else
let
you needed because I want
right,
to be able to
squeeze
in some more calls.
Finish.
Okay. Same subject actually, because we're talking about fourth, fifth, sixth cornerback. If we go that deep,
yeah,
we're talking about guys like Michael Hunter, Valentino Blake,
yep,
who's a vested veteran in the league. And if you look at safety with Burhey and with Pinkins, we're still paying those guys out there, aren't we? I mean, the guys working out today are getting paid, aren't they? So here's my point. You're not going to do much better on the open market on Labor Day weekend than Valentino Blake. So here's what I say.
Are you
Valentino,
sure?
Valentino, you're going to make $600,000 next year. Make a play. Make a play as the fifth cornerback on this team sometime during this season. Make a play. I don't think we can do much better.
Well,
he's been in winning locker rooms. That's why we signed him in the first place. Guy's a winner.
Maybe they can't do better, and if they can't, then he'll stay here. Don't you remember every single coach, and this is not just Ben McAdoo. This goes back to when I was covering Parcells. Every single coach will tell you throughout the entire preseason, every player on the back of that depth chart, especially, not your starter so much, but the
back of
the depth chart, they're competing with every guy in camp and every guy in everybody else's camp. That's the way the league works.
And when you make the roster, as Parcells used to say, if you think you're 46 through 53, rent. Don't buy.
Len, you just made the point.
That's what we're talking about.
That's what we're trying to tell you.
Len, based on the premise of your statement, that means every general manager in the National Football League, all 32, are doing a bad job. Because I could give you an example of every single team has made some type of a transaction when guys are off on the street on Labor Day and they haven't finalized their 53.
Oh,
so,
you know,
like I said, and I get where you come from, Len, and we're going to let you go because we want to get a few more people in. But every team is doing their due diligence in their final weekend by making transactions because they're always looking to upgrade, especially if a team surprisingly gets rid of what looked like a legitimate number two guy on a depth chart, and you could take the number two guy and make him your fourth, then you've upgraded your roster. There's no crime in that whatsoever.
Historically, he is one of our best callers.
Yes.
Okay? But I hope he does not get in his car today because he's liable to turn the wrong way down a one-way street because he is so backwards this morning.
And we are entitled to disagree, which we do a lot with the phone callers.
That's fine.
We give them an opportunity to voice their opinions. But I think that a generic statement like that, as I voice Paul, makes pretty much every GM look bad. And that's completely the opposite of what takes place on the NFL landscape. All right, let's head back to the lines. Norman is in Massachusetts. Norman, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys?
Hi. Norman, what do you got?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to respond to the Paul Perkins caller a few calls ago. He's complained about what a fifth-round pick did in this first season. I mean, I don't think you can expect a fifth-round pick to just burst on the scene like that every year. It doesn't happen that often.
Sure.
So we still have to wait and see what he does.
Yeah.
And then what I want to call about was for Monday's preseason game. I'm actually really excited to see the kicking battle again because in the first game, whenever they brought out Nugent or Rosas, I was excited to see what they would do. And Rosas has a real cannon on him, so I think he's going to win the job. I actually drove up to training camp on Sunday, and Nugent missed a few chip shots. So I think right now Rosas has the edge in that battle.
Well, he helped his own cause by translating what he's done all offseason into the game. And I think the Giants coaching staff is very pleased that they were able to get him an opportunity to kick a 52-yarder. You know, those don't necessarily come automatically. The game has to play out that way. He even mentioned that he was hoping to give Nugent, I think, an opportunity late, but he wanted the team to get an opportunity to drive down the field and get in scoring position. So that's why they chose not to maybe give a kicking opportunity to Nugent. But I think the game played out from a strategy standpoint very well to help assess the kicking situation, and I agree with you. That's something to watch Monday night, as well as the backup quarterback job.
And then another question. So in the first game, Rhett Ellison actually caught three passes for 20 yards, and obviously in Minnesota he wasn't utilized like that. So I was just curious if you think that's something that's going to continue into the preseason and for the rest of the season in general, or if you think it was just something just to try out.
All right, Norman. Well, we'll let you go. Appreciate the phone call. But he's taking all our mailbag questions. our mailbag feature, which is going to be up on Giants.com, was the two exact same questions.
You know, I think it's good that McAdoo finds out for himself what Ellison can do. He's always thought, he told us, that Ellison was underutilized in Minnesota. But what you've seen now is some evidence, not only in training camp, but in games, or at least in one game, that Ellison is certainly capable of doing other things should they want him to. I think that's really all you need to take away from that.
I agree with you, Paul. I think it's about the opportunity. If the opportunity presents itself, I think Ellison has proved he could catch the football and he could be a reliable security blanket. But it's all about whether or not the opportunity is going to present itself. I do think he has a much better shot getting those chances here compared to when you look at what he was dealing with Minnesota. And also, he was the primary fullback to block for Adrian Peterson. That may or may not be the case here. He also had Kyle Rudolph on the team. He had John Carlson on the team. Now, I understand he has Evan Engram, but let's face it, when you look at the tight end group, Paul, he's by far the most experienced tight end on this roster. Yes. That was not the case when he was in Minnesota, so I think, once again, the opportunity is a little bit more encouraging here. All right, we said Len may have had a rough phone call, Paul. Well, we didn't hear from Charlie in Portland, Maine just yet.
Oh.
So Charlie's going to finish things off, unfortunately, today.
Charlie, just do me one favor. Honestly, try to be calm on this one, because the last 2 days, my blood pressure's going through the roof with somebody's calls. Please don't do this.
Listen, we can handle Charlie. I'm not worried.
Here comes the sanity call.
Oh, yes. But, well, if that's what you call it. That's nice.
Go, Charlie, go.
A euphemism for sanity.
I just want to say to Len, stand your ground, Len. I understand where you're coming from. It's like two sides of a coin. But I'm not going to talk about that. I just got two questions for you guys, and I'll take it right off the air.
Oh, wow. How nice of you.
Okay? It's about the offensive line, okay?
Oh, wow. Shocker.
But I'm taking it off the air. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not upset about anything.
Because we're almost out of time, Charlie. Go ahead.
I just want to ask you guys a question. About Eric Flowers, when do you draw the line? Do you either draw the line after the fourth preseason game, after the second game of the year, after the sixth game of the year, after the 10th game of the year, or you just let the whole year go?
I'm going to answer that for you now.
Not improved enough.
Well, let him ask his second one, and then we'll talk.
Okay.
Yeah,
let me give my second question.
Sure.
All right. My second question. I forgot what.
That's good. We're not complaining. We finally have found a way to quiet down Charlie.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
No, my second question was Plan B. When do you start planning for Plan B if Hart and Flowers do not get good enough to be our tackles? When do we start Plan
okay.
B?
Okay.
The fourth preseason game, the second game of the year, the sixth game of the year, the 10th game of the year, or we just forget it for the whole year?
They've already done
that,
Charlie.
I'll take it off the air.
All
okay,
right,
Charlie,
very good.
Appreciate the phone call.
We'll make it real quick. Answer to question number one, as long as Flowers continues to show some incremental progress, no matter how small it is, as long as he continues to build off of that, it's a wait and see. You cannot predetermine right now and say, oh, by X week, if he's not doing it, we're making a change. That's not the way it goes. If you're not fluid about this, you're doing a disservice to your football team. You have to be fluid about it and see how it's going on a week-to-week basis. That's number one. Number two, they've already begun Plan B. They know that Bobby Hart has shown much more improvement than Flowers has. He's going to be the guy at right tackle, okay? But, excuse me, I believe that if Flowers should not work out and they should have to make a move, I think already in their mind, and you can tell by the way they're working Biznovati in, you can tell by the way they're working DJ Fluker into this line. You're either going to have Pugh slide out to left tackle, and Fluker's going to play left guard, and that's going to be your new starting five. It's going to force a double switch, okay? Or there's even a possibility, maybe if they feel good enough about Bobby Hart, he might go out to left tackle, and Fluker might go to right tackle. And that's another double switch. Should they have to do it? These are a couple of the options that would be available to the Giants should they be forced to play their hand. Obviously, they don't want to play their hand. They'd like to see the current five get the job done.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Plan B, you know, those conversations always have to happen, and it has nothing to do with necessarily the performance. It has to do with injuries. I mean, you always have to be ready in the event somebody goes down, you know, what you're going to do to replace that player. And that's why Fluker has seen some time at various spots. Remember, three different positions he's gotten work at during camp. both spots on the right side and left guard, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So they are trying to at least get him comfortable mm-hmm. in various spots. And we'll see what happens during the preseason to see whether or not they're going to implement anything from a change aspect. But plan B always has to be in place. It has to be in place even before training camp starts, because you have to say to yourself, hey, these first few practices, we want to get him reps at these spots.
I still think that if something happens during the season, their best option is moving Pugh out to left tackle and putting Fluker in at left guard. I still think that's their best option.
And they didn't necessarily need to see anything in training camp to have that option.
And there are no left tackles out there now, including Ryan Clady, who retired, by the way, that's going to be better than that option.
Well, the only other guy, and I'm actually surprised Charlie didn't mention it, but he's been mentioning it like crazy on Twitter, is the fact that Brandon Albert is out there right now. He's the one that briefly retired, then decided he wanted to come back.
You
want
to call Tom Coughlin to get a reference on Brandon Albert?
I think that Tom it may not be able to give you a fair assessment under these circumstances, given what transpired. All right, with that being said, we appreciate all the phone calls, appreciate all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, as the team will resume practicing tomorrow because they had an off day today. But we do appreciate everybody for tuning in. We'll be back up and running tomorrow. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest team news. For Paul DeTino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.